All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. And it's a great schus to be able to resume this shir on our topic of Perek Shira. We find ourselves just continuing right where we left off. So we find ourselves towards the end of the first chapter of Perek Shira. Today, focusing on one. Does everyone have sheets? There are extra sheets up here if anyone needs. Okay, hopefully they're around. Good. So let's begin with number one, Yomim Omrim. So if you remember again to our last shir, which of course I know is on the frontal lobe right here. So remember again, we spoke about the interesting idea that in Perek Shira, when it comes to water, so we're going to explore a number of different bodies of water. In the last shir, we spoke about water itself, Mayim. Now we're focusing in this section on Yomim. Yomim we're going to translate as the sea, or seas, plural. Yomim Omrim, so what do the seas say? Mikolos mayim rabim adirim mishpereyom adir bamarom Hashem. Quoting from Tehillim, Perek Tzadik Gimel Pasek Dalit, chapter 93, verse 4. The seas say, more than the voices of the many waters, mikolos mayim rabim, more than the voices of many waters, adirim mishpereyom. Even more than the mighty waves of the sea, Adir Bamarom Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is on high, Bamarom on high, and is exceptionally mighty. So remember again, as we start with Perek Shira, the entire essence of Perek Shira, and this is true no matter who the author of Perek Shira is. We spend a significant amount of time discussing who the author is. Independent of whoever the author is, the message is the same, which is to be able to somehow learn about the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatness of our world, and by extension, the greatness of ourselves through examining nature. Remember again, Perek Shira, although it precedes the Rambam writes again in Hilchos Deo something very important. I think we've studied this concept in other contexts or in other shiurim. The Rambam discusses in Hilchos Deos that a person is supposed to come to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a mitzvah, V'yahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, you should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your possessions. And so the Rambam asks the million-dollar question, which is, how do you come to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Remember again, the famous kasha that's asked, how can you legislate emotion? But the Rambam says something that even throws some fuel on the fire, even in Tanzah. The Rambam says, how should you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He says, like a man loves a woman. That's how the Rambam described the love that a Jew is supposed to have for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like a man loves, what is the Rambam describing? The Rambam is describing over here a passionate relationship. And in fact, the Rambam says something amazing. He says the same thing that when a man is in love with a woman, he can't stop thinking about her. She's always on his mind. That's the love that a Jew has to have towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm infatuated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't stop thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Shevisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid. So the Rambam says, okay, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. How does one come to a level of divine appreciation, divine love, and divine infatuation? Because that's really what the Rambam is describing over here. Almost more than love and infatuation. So the Rambam has many different levels of understanding. But of course, the one that Rambam says, just look at the natural world. The best way to fall in love with God is through His creations. The best way to fall in love with God is by looking at the natural world. Because through the natural world, you see the power, the prowess, the beauty of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's true. The truth is, sometimes, if we're honest, we have some of our most moving spiritual moments, not in shul and not in shir, right? But very often just out in the world, right? You see a sunrise, you see a sunset, you see the ocean, which we'll discuss, you see things like this, and you just fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if somebody were to ask you to describe what you're feeling, very often it's difficult to describe these events, because they're much more in my heart and in my soul than in my intellect. When I come to a shir, or I daven, or I come to shul, or I hear a drasha, very often that's spiritual, but it's also intellectual. When you come into nature and you connect with God like that, it's really not an intellectual experience at all, much more an emotional, spiritual experience. So that's the what Perek Shira is. Perek Shira is, instead of us talking to nature, it's nature talking to us, so to speak. And nature telling us how to come to a greater appreciation of God, and by extension ourselves, through the natural world. So here, the seas, the sea, is telling us. Now, the sea is telling us, the ocean, we'll use the word ocean right now. The ocean, because we're going to see, we're going to make a distinction with rivers, between seas and rivers. So right now we'll use the word ocean. What does the ocean, what does the sea tell us? As great, more than the voices of the many waters, more than the mighty waves, Hashem is mighty. The Ribbono Shel Olam who dwells above in the celestial abode is mightier than everything else. What's the message? If you take a look at number two, so there's a beautiful parish, the parish tell Rabbeinu Yosef Chiyun. Rabbeinu Yosef Chiyun was one of the most highly regarded rabbis. I don't think he was the chief rabbi, but one of the most highly respected rabbis in Lisbon, in Portugal, in the mid-1400s. It's a little bit of a historical debate when exactly he lived and when exactly he died, somewhere within the 1400s. And Rabbi Yosef Chiyun wrote a manuscript on Sefer Tehillim. He wrote a number of different things. A parish on Chumash. It's not as well known, but his writings are exceptional. So in his parish on Tehillim, he writes as follows. Mem mikolos mem asiba. Kimo mireach. Skip a little bit. Misibas kolos mayim rabim shem adirim. Vechei misibas adirim mishpireyam. Yivode shuhu yisparachu adir bamorom. So Rav Yosef Chiyun says something amazing. He says that you have to read the pasuk like this. The kolos mayim can mean a couple of different things. You see, the way it's translated is mi kolos mayim. The English translation says more than the voices of the mighty waters, more than the mighty waves of Hashem. Hashem is mighty on high, or Hashem is on high is mighty. Rav Yosef Chiyun says no. The way it's to be read is, me could also mean not that more, but rather because of, as a result of. As a result of the voices of the many waters, as a result of the mighty waves of the sea, as a result of that, Hashem is on high, is mighty. What does that mean? Right, Rav Chiyun, something amazing. Vizeh. I'm in number two, third line in, last word on the line after the period. Vizeh. Ki aroa mishpireyam. Whoever sees, and we're going to discuss these terms in greater depth in just a moment, because the pasuk itself is making reference to different things over here. There is mikolos mayim rabim, the voice of the many waters, mishpireyam. Mishpireyam literally translated means what? The breakers, right? Waves. Waves. We're going to discuss this in greater depth. So Rav Yosef Chiyun says that as one who sees the waters, one who sees the waves, v'cheskam be'es neshiva saruach ha'chazaka, and sees the might of the sea. You know, again, everybody likes looking at a tranquil ocean, a beautiful body of water. It's fantastic. When do you see the strength of the sea? When it's turbulent. When there's a storm, right? When there's a swell, when there's a surge, that's when you begin to see the enormity of the power of the sea. And yet, amazingly enough, when you see again the sea swell as a result, ultimately again, of the strong winds, yakir mizeh chozek Hashem betokfo. You can begin to gain a little bit of an insight into the incredible power and prowess of the divine. Im heyos yoshev b'morom gavoa me'adam shelo yuchal liroso. So Yosef says something amazing. He says, what is the sea telling us? Do you want to understand the might of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Do you want to understand the might? The might of HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be gleaned from the sea. Have you ever been on a boat in choppy seas? All right, so I'll tell you, we had this experience. When we were in Eretz Yisrael, during the summer, we had friends of ours who took us sailing on the Mediterranean. It was mamish beautiful. And it happened, it was a gorgeous day. We got out on the water, and it got windy. It got windy. So, I'm from New Jersey, so what do I know about sailing? Okay, beautiful breeze, it's so wonderful. It's beautiful for about, 10 minutes, until you're bobbing up and down, up and down. And it's an amazing thing. You're powerless. You're powerless. It doesn't make a difference how much money you have. It doesn't make a difference how many connections you have. It doesn't make a difference how many letters before your name or after your name. You cannot control what is happening on the open seas. It's a humbling experience. You could tell the captain of the boat, please turn this around, right? But at the, even that takes a little bit of time. It's an incredible, incredible mussar. Says Rav Yosef Chiyun, do you want to get a glimpse into the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A glimpse? Look at the turbulent ocean. Not the placid ocean, not the calm ocean, not the ocean on a nice, tranquil, sunny day. Look at the ocean in the middle of a storm. Look at the ocean in the middle of a dramatic swell. And that is but one of God's creations. That is but one of the Ribono Shel'Olam's creations. And from that you could see just even a small iota of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at the vastness of the sea. Ever look out at the ocean? And how amazing is it to look into a vast ocean of blue and not be able to see where it ends. You know intellectually it ends because you know the map, but you can't see it. It looks infinite. It looks like it overtakes everything. Says the Yamim, says the sea, says the ocean to us. If you want to gain an appreciation into the greatness and the strength and the limitlessness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the sea. Look at nature, specifically the ocean, and it'll give you an insight, it'll give you a window into the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and into the limitlessness of the Ribono Shel Olam. That's one approach. Take a look at number three. Rabbi Nachman. And Rabbi Nachman is not commenting on Parak Shira. Rabbi Nachman is commenting on this pasuk in Tehillim. So remember again, we've already discovered that Parak Shira is organized in such a way, people think Parak Shira is very esoteric. It's esoteric if you just read it. But if you realize whoever compiled it, whether it was David HaMelech, Rabbi Akiva, a couple of other different opinions, whoever it was, compiled it in a way that all of Parak Shira is made up of psukim. It's all made up of verses. So the incredible part is sometimes the message is not contained in the stated meaning in Parak Shira right over here. Sometimes the message needs to be gleaned by going back and looking at the pasuk. So the sea is quoting a pasuk from Tehillim. Rabbi Nachman says in number three something amazing. Mikolos mayim rabim adirim ishpereyam ardir bamarom Hashem. So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. Kind of focusing almost on the same theme as Rabbi Yosef Chiyun, Rabbi Yosef Chiyun, as the sea representing turbulence. He says something amazing. Kiyaf api, shahamayim rabim adirim mishpereyam, misgabrim al kol odam kol kach kol kach. This is such beautiful verbiage. The Rebbe says, listen to these words. Even though the great waters, the voices of the many waters, the waves, misgabrim al kol adam, kol kach, overtake every single person so much. You know, water is very interesting because water represents a variety of different things. And actually, amazingly enough, it appeared to be inherently contradictory things. Water represents Torah. Water represents
tranquility.
Right? Tranquility. Water represents chesed, life. What else does water represent? Water represents renewal. But it also represents, which are all kind of, you could group all of those things on one side. Water also represents adversity, challenge, danger, difficulty. It's amazing. It's an incredible thing how one thing could be a metaphor for polar opposite experiences. So Rabbi Nachman, you know, the Medrash quotes that when Avraham Avinu was on his way to the Akedah, so right, the Satan tried to derail him many different times. One of the ways he tried to derail him was how? By placing in front of him a body of water. Avraham Avinu walks into the water and he says, Elohim, ba'u mayim ad nafesh. I'm about to drown. Water is great, unless there's too much of it. Right? Then you drown. Rabbi Nachman says over here, David HaMelech is using water in this context, not as tranquility, not as Torah, not as chesed, not as renewal, but as overwhelming life challenge. Overwhelming life challenge. Mikolos mayim rabim, adirim mishperyam, says the Rebbe, who amongst us does not contend with the waves of existence? Who amongst us does not have to deal with, sometimes it's a wave and sometimes it's a tidal wave of challenges? And you know how sometimes the waves, you know, if you ever go to the ocean, so the waves are a lot of fun. The waves can be very beautiful. As long as what? As long as they're not too high, not too strong, and don't come with rapid succession, and you're near the shore. There's a lot of caveats over there. I'm sorry? Oh, we're Jews. I'm talking to a group of Jews. Oh, yeah, all right, good. So the idea over here is that the Rebbe's understanding, Adirim Mishpareyam, is talking about the breakers. It's talking about the waves. And the Rebbe's Lashon is so amazing. It's talking about the waves that kind of pummel us over and over and over. And look at his Lashon. Al kol adam kol kach kol kach. You see, if you know a little bit about the life of Rabbi Nachman, you understand, by the way, that he's not talking about suffering in an existential way. He's talking about life. Right? Rabbi Nachman dealt with illness. Rabbi Nachman died at the age of 39 from tuberculosis after having lost a child, after having dealt with prolonged periods of what probably was some type of emotional turmoil, maybe even bordering on depression. Rabbi Nachman writes about it and speaks about it extensively. Rabbi Nachman says life is filled with tidal waves. And those waves constantly wash over us. Not one, not two, not here, not there. It sometimes feels like it's all the time everywhere. Bechinas. And he quotes over here another pasuk from David HaMelech. Ko mishparecha vegalecha alai avaru. David HaMelech says in Tehillim and days, God, all of your breakers and all of your waves, they wash over me. They wash over me. You know, that lashon of washing over me could mean a couple of different things. Sometimes washing over means is good, right? I bow my head like we spoke about before. The waves washed right over me and I'm fine. But sometimes what it also means is I can't get myself to the surface. I can't catch my breath. The waves are constantly coming down upon me and I can't seem to regain my footing. He says, Afa Piking. So the Rebbe says, so what do you do? What do you do in life when the waves of just life are constantly pummeling you? What do you do when you feel Mikolos Mayim Rabim? All I hear are the thunderous waves all around me. Adirim Mishbereyam. The waves are so strong. The mighty waves are constantly crashing into me. And I can't stand up. I can't get my footing. I can't catch my breath. What do you do in those moments, says the Rebbe? Listen to this. Afa Pikein. Mikulam Adir Bamarom Hashem. How does the pasuk end? See, the Rebbe understands the pasuk very differently. The Rebbe understands the pasuk as, like most of Tehillim, as a portrait of the human condition. David HaMelech is describing a person who feels constantly pummeled by the waves of life. Constantly pummeled by the waves of adversity. I hear the thunderous waves in my ears. I feel the waves constantly crashing down to me. So what do I do? What do I do? And what's the answer? Adir Bamarom Hashem. As mighty as the waves are, as mighty as the ocean is, there's something even stronger, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean? Listen to what the Rebbe says. Afal Pikei Mikulam Adir Bamarom Hashem V'hu Yigmar HaKol Kirtzono V'yavi HaKol El HaTachlis HaTov HaAmiti HaNitzchi. So the Rebbe says something amazing. You know what's even stronger than the waves, even stronger than the undertow of the water, even stronger than the sound of the waves? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Rebbe, attach yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you'll be able to weather the waves. Now I want to be clear on something. Rabbi Nachman, and part of the beauty of Rabbi Nachman's writings, is he's very truthful to the human dynamic. Sometimes people like to weave a narrative. Put your faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all will be okay. Now that is an absolutely true statement. Put your faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything will be okay. Okay is a relative term. Okay does not mean put your faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything is going to turn out as you wanted it. You know, this is very important because I feel sometimes that this goes ahead and trickles down. People, I find today, it's interesting, I find that many people seem to be suffering from like crises of emunah. And it's interesting. I don't know that there were any, ever before Klal Yisrael had so many Jews who were focusing on crises of emunah. Now, it's a good reason. Why not? Because the truth is, like, pretty much until a generation or two ago, we were just focused on staying alive. Like, I just didn't want to get killed in a pogrom. That was like a good day. You know? And I just trying to keep Shabbos. We don't have that anymore. Baruch Hashem. So it's interesting. So I always try to analyze, why do we have so many crises of emunah? And I think very often it's because we have an exceptionally one-dimensional and infantile view of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu works. Like a person says, for example, I'm going to stay in learning, and if I stay in learning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of all of my needs. So by the way, that might very well be true. That might very well be true. As long as your needs are exceptionally minimal. You see, sometimes I think to myself, I want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm not going to do certain things, and God's going to take care of me in accordance with my lifestyle. No. The Gemara records many stories of great men who gave up all the trappings of the material world to learn Torah. And they survived. And do you know how they survived? With buxer, a carob tree, a spring of water. It wasn't the latest lease. And it wasn't the nicest house. So meaning, you can't have everything. You can't have everything. And so when people think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me, yes, if you choose not to do certain things and you choose to devote yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rebbe Shlomo absolutely will take care of you in accordance with the most basic human necessary needs for survival. So I put my faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So sometimes I think, Rebbe Shlomo, I put in my piece, you're going to give me back what I'm doing my part. So you have to understand something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not an ATM. It's not just the pshat. You put in your card, punch in the code. Okay, I want $100 in tens. Sure, of course, no problem. And if I'm not happy with them, I'm going to switch banks. That's not how HaKadosh Baruch Hu works. The Ribono Shel Olam operates on a much more complex theological level. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Nachman says, I want to be clear. When we speak about putting your faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yes, the waves are overtaking me. What do I do when the waves are overtaking me? So the Rebbe says, put your faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Establish connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything is going to be fine. That word, everything is going to be fine, is a very relative term. It does not mean that everything is going to work out the way you wanted it to. It doesn't mean that everything is going to work out the way you had planned for. And it doesn't mean everything is going to work out, quote unquote, according to your satisfaction. What it means is that when you become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you create a synergistic partnership with God, you become part of the plan. And if you are a true Baal or Baalas Emunah, you recognize that whatever happens to you is in fact part of the makeup of the plan. Sometimes I like the plan, sometimes I don't like the plan. God never asks us to like the plan. He just asks us to accept the plan. He asks us to understand that He knows much more than us, understands much more than us, and has a haya hove v'yihye view of the universe that we could never comprehend. So the Rebbe says this is the meaning of the pasuk, and by extension, this is what the sea is teaching us. Mikolos mayim rabim adirim mishpereyam. So it's talking about life. I'm being pummeled by the waves of life. I'm being pummeled by the realities of my circumstances. What do I do? Stronger than the waves. Adir b'marom Hashem. Do you know what you need in order to survive the waves of existence? It's a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. A relationship with God is the life preserver in the turbulent sea of life. But explains the Rebbe, let's not have any misconceptions here. A relationship with God does not mean that everything is going to go your way, does not mean everything is going to happen the way you wanted it to happen, and does not mean that you're always going to be happy with the result. What does it mean? You won't drown. What it means is no matter how overwhelming the waves are, you will not drown. No matter how thunderous the breakers may be, you might be swept under, right, for a little bit, but not forever. You'll come back up. You'll catch your breath. you will regain your footing. According to Rabbi Nachman, what the sea is teaching us is that life is turbulent. And it's important for us to embrace that reality of existence. Because there's another issue, which is, I feel like I haven't spoken to all of you for such a long time. I have so much to say, so many issues that I've been accumulating, right? Which is somehow we have this expectation that life is supposed to be easy. And we have this expectation that life is supposed to be challenge-free. And if something comes up or a challenge occurs, what happened? What happened? What did I do wrong? Why is God doing this to me? So where did that expectation, I think, comes from greater culture. It's not from us. Because the Jewish people have absolutely no expectation that anything is supposed to be easy. Today is not supposed to be easy. Life is not supposed to be easy. Waves are part and parcel of the human condition. My job is to stay afloat. Staying afloat is the first step. Then I'm supposed to swim somewhere. I'm supposed to get to a destination. Staying afloat is a good first part. But ultimately, again, it's not the end goal of life. How do you stay afloat? A relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. There has to be a relationship. And this, I think, kind of opens up an incredibly, I think, something important for us to think about. Because I think a lot of times we are behaviorally observant. A lot of times I do the mitzvos. I do the mitzvos. I don't do averos. I'm doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of me. I am fulfilling the mechanistic details of my religion. But do I have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And those two things are not the same. You can go ahead. You can go ahead and do everything God asks of you. And don't do the things God doesn't want you to do. But that does not automatically translate into a relationship. In the same way that with a human parent, right? I might do everything for my mother, for my father, right? I fulfill the details. I don't really have any, but that doesn't mean that I have a deep connection with them. A relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu means a deeper connection that transcends just simple behavioral obligations. The behavioral obligations are the underpinning of that relationship. You can't have relationship without commitment. No such thing as relationship without commitment. Our commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes in the form of Torah and mitzvos. That's the commitment. If you don't have the commitment, then there's no relationship to speak about. The behaviors set the foundation. But you have to build the foundation. So how do you build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So this is not our topic for today. But if it were, what I would tell you is as follows. There are many ways to build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first simple way is talk to God. Talk to God. I don't mean daven. I don't mean daven. I mean in addition to davening. Take time out of your day to talk to the Ribono Shel Olam. Not with a Tehillim, and not with a Siddur, not with a Shacharis, not with a Mincha. Those are things, if you have time, you should do, of course, of course, of course. I'm talking about when you have a few moments, which rarely happens, I know for most of us. When you have a few moments, say, Ribono Shel Olam, let me tell you about my life. I know you're God, so I know you know it all anyway. I got it. But I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you. I want to tell you what's happening with me. I want to tell you what's happening in my home. I want to tell you what's happening with my children. I want to tell you the things that are going great. And I want to tell you the things that are really miserable. I want to tell you the things that I'm happy about. I want to tell you the things I'd love to change. I just want to talk to you. I just want to talk to you. Sometimes it sounds, especially to those a little bit more cerebral, like that's kooky, right? What, I talk to God, I daven. I daven, that's what I do. I can tell you the profound cathartic experience it is to talk to the Ribono Shel Olam without a Siddur, without a Sefer Tehillim, just as you would talk to your friends. And the weight you will feel that comes off of your soul when you have a conversation with God, and the simcha and the love that will fill your heart when you just have a conversation is indescribable. It might not be after the first conversation. It might take a couple. But that's how you cultivate a relationship. You make time to talk outside of the prescribed obligatory conversations, right? The same way that a couple, right? A couple has to speak about certain things. There are bills that are due. There are chinuch decisions we have to make. But every couple knows that's what? If all you speak about is the children and the bills, it's not good. It's not good. There has to be something more to the relationship than just the obligations of the household. Otherwise, the relationship is flat. It's passionless. It's lacking excitement. It's the same thing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It can't just be that my conversations with God are refa'inu, shmakoleinu, v'lushalayim ircha, yancha Hashem b'yom tzara. There has to be more. There has to be more. There just has to be a dialogue. And that dialogue may contain many of the same elements that I'm davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my tefillah. But 5 minutes a day. 5 minutes a day. Of just uninterrupted, but that's the key. You have to shut off your phone and you have to shut out the intrusions. 5 minutes a day of pure conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how you build relationship. That's the Adir Bamarom Hashem. And when you build relationship with the divine, that relationship will help you through the waves, through the breakers, through the turbulencies. That relationship will be there by your side to bolster you and to hold you up, even in the most difficult of times. That relationship will not take away the challenges. That relationship will not remove the obstacles. That relationship will not replace a stormy sea with placid, calm, and tranquil waters, but it will absolutely give you the necessary tools to be able to weather that storm. That's Rabbi Nachman. The Rebbe then goes on, by the way, just makes an interesting observation. It happens to be that we know, we recite this phrase, Mikolos Mayim Rabim, Adire Mishpram Debaram Hashem Wen, at the entranceway of Shabbos. It is actually the last paragraph of Kabbalah's Shabbos that we say, Hashem Malach Geus Lavesh. We say this on Shabbos. And the Rebbe says, makes a lot of sense. Shabbos is a day of tranquility. But again, not our topic for today. So far now we have two interpretations as to what the sea is telling us. We have Rabbeinu Yosef Chiyun, who is telling us that ultimately the sea is teaching us, look at me, look at my power, look at my prowess, and that will give you an appreciation of the greatness, the power and prowess of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have Rabbi Nachman telling us that, in fact, the sea is using its dynamic as a metaphor for the human condition. Life is filled with waves. Life is filled with thunderous waves, overwhelming waves, crashing waves of difficulty and adversity. How do you maintain your footing? Adir Bamarom Hashem. By attaching yourself to the one thing that is stronger than the sea, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Cultivate a meaningful relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam in such a simple way that simple daily dialogue could advance your relationships with HaKadosh Baruch Hu light years, will help instill you with a real sense of emunah, not a one-dimensional infantile emunah that sometimes so many of us walk around life with. Have that relationship with the Adir Bamarom Hashem, and that will help you with all of the ways of existence. We now come to a third approach. And this will be our final approach for today. So again, as we've been mentioning, if you notice again, when the sea speaks, the sea really refers to two different parts of its makeup. On one hand, again, there's the Mikolos Mayim Rabim. There are the waters, right? The waters. More than the voices of the many waters. Adirim Mishpereyam. Now, interestingly enough, the sea does not see it sufficient to just describe itself as water, but instead describes itself as Mishperei Yam. So again, the Mitzvah David in number 4 says, Mishperei Yam refers to what? Hemgale Hayam. Hemgale Hayam. Now if you notice again, David HaMelech, he refers to Mikolos Mayim Rabim. When referring to the waters, he discusses the sound of the waters. When describing the waves, he calls it Adirin Mishpereyam, the waves, and the Mesudas David says, Adir means chazak, strong. Adir could also mean what? Could also mean precious, or special, or great. Right? So it could be strong, precious, great. So we see again that the sea, David HaMelech, when referring to the sea, refers to the waters, but goes out of his way to make mention of the waves. There's something special about the waves. There's something strong about the waves, which we saw in Rabbi Nachman. There's something precious, great, and beautiful about the waves. What is it? So I'll show you something amazing. Take a look at number 5. So the Gemara Maseches Baba Basra is an incredible Gemara. Mishalo ra'a binyan hordus, Lo ra binyan na'a miyamav. Whoever did not see the structure, this is number 5 on your sheet, whoever has not seen the structure of Herod, never saw a beautiful building in his entire life. Now I remember again, a brief introduction. Hordus, Herod, was a slave of the Hashmonai family. Hasmonean slave. Herod leaves a slave revolt against the Hashmonai family. He kills all of them with the exception of one young woman, one girl, Hashmonai daughter, whom he fell in love with. He wiped out the entire family in an effort to go, but he spared her because he wanted to marry her. This young woman, who is unnamed by the Gemara, goes up to the top of her father's palace, cries out, "I am the last remaining family member of the Hashmonai, the Hasmonean family. Whoever claims they are part of the Hasmonean dynasty after this, they are a slave." She's making reference to Herod. She throws herself off the top of the palace, taking her own life because she would not marry this slave. Herod seizes power. He becomes king. Was Herod good or bad for the Jews? I'll give you a hint. Either way, you're correct. Herod was probably schizophrenic, right? I'm not saying that, chas v'shalom, in a way. He probably was clinically schizophrenic. Herod, on one hand, wiped out almost the entire Sanhedrin. He wiped out the entire Sanhedrin. Why? Because he realized that he was not a rightful heir to the Jewish throne, and the Sanhedrin would challenge him. He wiped them all out. Afterwards, he felt very bad for decimating the entire rabbinic community. So he decides, you know what? We're going to rebuild and enhance the second temple. Second temple was already there. He wanted to expand it, right? So he wanted to expand it, and he built a magnificent, magnificent edifice. He expands the temple. More importantly, he expands the Harabayis. The Harabayis, the Temple Mount before Herod, was much smaller. The Harabayis that we call Harabayis today is actually the Herodian Harabayis. So in fact, we know when you go to the Kotel today, that is one of the walls built by Herod. We have something left of the Beis HaMikdash to this very day because of Herod. That's obviously not one of the actual walls of the Beis HaMikdash. It's one of the supporting walls. Because remember, again, brief history lesson. Because Herod extended the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is a mountain. Good, right? Mountain. Problem with a mountain is you don't have a lot of flat space. So what do you do if you want to extend the Temple Mount? You have to bring in tons of dirt, build up the site, making it flat. But how do you keep the dirt there? You build retaining walls. The Kotel that we have today is one of the retaining walls built by Herod, which is why if you see pictures of the Harabayis, it's actually very interesting. Because what does the Harabayis look like? It's a large, flat plaza. So I wonder to yourself, I don't understand. How is the top of a mountain a large, flat plaza? That's because of Herod, which, by the way, as an aside, interestingly enough, although it's subject to dispute, but one of the reasons why many explain that a Jew is permitted to ascend to Harabayis today in certain areas is because many of the areas, especially along the periphery, do not have Kiddushas Harabayis. They do not have Temple Mount sanctity. Why don't they have Temple Mount sanctity? Because Temple Mount sanctity could only be established by the Sanhedrin. The periphery of the current day Temple Mount was not made by the Sanhedrin. It was made by Herod. Okay, that's a lot of information to absorb. But back to our regularly scheduled program. So take a look. Back in number 5. So the Gemara says, whoever has not seen the structure built by Herod, lo ra'a binyan no'e miyamav, has never seen beautiful architecture. So the Gemara says something quite beautiful, right? If you haven't seen the temple that Herod built, you don't know what beautiful building is, okay? So the Gemara says, by my banya, he said, tell me, what was so beautiful about the building of Herod? This is amazing. Amarabba, so what did Herod build it with? Amarabba, ba'avni shisha umirma. He built it with stones of white and green marble. Igid amri ba'avla kuchla. Others say, no, it was stones of blue, white, and green marble. Apik shisha v'ayal shifa. So, okay, blue, green, and white marble, all interspersed. Furthermore, what did Herod do? So when putting the marble stones, or marble, I guess we call it stones, slabs, one on top of the other, he didn't make the exterior of the Beis HaMikdash flush. Instead, some stones protruded, some stones were recessed. There's an architectural name for that. I don't know the name, but you know, some stones recessed, some stones protruding. Why? Ki dinekabel sido. So the truth is, Herod did it for a very practical reason, so as to enable there to be multiple layers of plaster to be able to keep the stones cohesive with one another. Okay, beautiful building. Savar lemishe bedava. Herod thought, you know what? It's not enough. It's not enough. The green, white, and blue marble is beautiful, but we can make it more beautiful. Let's cover the whole thing in gold. Let's cover the entire Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine this? The entire exterior of the Beis HaMikdash in gold. So, Amar li Rabbanan, the rabbi said, Shafke. No, Herod, leave it alone. Don't touch the exterior. Why? Dehachi shaper tvei. Because the way it looks now is even more beautiful than gold. Why? Demechsi. Ki idvisad diyama. Because why does it look even more beautiful? Because now it looks like the waves of the sea. Think about this for just a moment. The exterior is made from blue, green, and white marble interspersed. The placement of the stones is that some protrude and some are recessed. It mamish looks like a big ocean. It looks like a big ocean. It looks like the sea. Herod is ready to cover the whole thing in gold. The rabbis say, thank you so much. I'm sure they took the donation. You know, let's be clear, right? We'll put the donation elsewhere, right? But let's not go ahead and cover it with gold. Leave the exterior as it is. Leave the exterior as it is in order that what? It should continue to look like the waves of the sea. Okay, take a look at Rashi. Rashi, Idvisad Yama, number 6. Gali Hayam, Shein Noim Vinadin. Because just like the waves of the sea, Noim v'Nadim, go up and down, Va'ayin mis'asheshes b'ri'iyasen. So it's like an optical illusion. So apparently because of the mixture of colors, the recessed and protruding stones, so literally again, the walls of the Beis HaMikdash looked like a big ocean, like the waves of the sea. So the question of course becomes, why is it, that the rat mean gold would have been beautiful. Also, remember, so it's not like we don't like gold. We like gold. Remember, it's this week's parashios. Everything is made from gold. The aron is made from gold. The shulchan is made from gold. The mizbeach is made from gold. Right? Everything is gold, silver, copper. We love precious metals, especially in the house of God. So why is it that the rabbis were resistant to this? Clearly, again, although gold would have been beautiful, and gold would have been very bakavadik for the Ribon Shalom Chazal, the rabbi, the Sanhedrin felt that they wanted the ocean metaphor, they wanted the wave metaphor as part of the edifice of the Beis HaMikdash. And the question is why? So the Sfas MS, the Ger Rebbe, advances an incredible, incredible insight. And he quotes the Pasuk from Tehillim. The Pasuk says, Ata Moshel Begeos Hayam, Biso Galov Ata Teshabchim. So David HaMelech, by the way, you begin to see, even just today, how much reference David HaMelech makes to the sea, to the ocean, right? Which is really quite amazing. Remember again, David HaMelech's capital is in Yerushalayim. It's not like he's spending all that much time gazing out at the ocean. There's no bodies of water by Yerushalayim. There are springs. But yet David HaMelech felt incredibly pulled towards this metaphor of the water. So listen to this. So the Pasuk says, Atamosha Begeos Hayam, you rule the swelling of the sea. Biso galov ato teshabchim. When its waves surge, ato teshabchim. So again, what the Pasuk seems to be highlighting over here is kind of this theme we already saw in Rabbeinu Chiyun earlier on, which is as powerful as the sea is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over the sea. Ato teshabchim. What does teshabchim mean? So the Ibn Ezra says, I ruined it a little bit by giving you the English translation, but the Ibn Ezra writes in number 9, teshabchim tashkitein. You quiet the sea. You quiet the sea. The Malbim says, teshabchim tashpilein. Even the largest of waves, you bring them down. So it appears in the most basic level, David HaMelech is saying to God, that you rule over the swelling of the sea, as large and as strong as the waves may be, Ato teshabchem. You are Kodesh Baruch Hu. You still the waves. You silence the waves. You bring the waves down. But the Zohar says something amazing. The Zohar writes in number 10, really something dramatically amazing. Davar acher tishabchem mamish. The Zohar says, I don't understand. The word tishabchem is a very simply translated word. What does tishabchem mean? Shevach, to praise. The Ribon Shalom, you praise the waves. You praise the waves. Davar acher tishabchem mamish. Shvacho hulon. God praises the waves. Why? Begin the selkin b'te'ufta l'mechame. Why? Because they find the strength. Begin because the selkin, literally they move themselves forward. They rise up b'te'ufta. Te'ufta sounds like what? Te'avon. With an appetite. They rise themselves up with an appetite l'mechame. Only to come crashing down. Says the Tzar something absolutely amazing. Do you know why the waves are amazing? Do you ever see a wave, right? Do you ever stand by the banks of the ocean? And then what happens? You see the wave forming out. And as you're watching it, it's gaining momentum. And it's getting stronger. And again, the height is accelerating. And then it begins to crest. And when you look at it for that moment, you're standing on the shore, and what's going through your mind? What's going through your mind? Right? Wow. Right? And the truth is, you were like, am I standing too close? Am I going to get hit by it? But then something amazing happens, which is, it crashes. And by this time it gets to you standing on shore, what is it? It's a little bit of white surf. It's nothing. Something so powerful that looked like it was going to overtake everything was reduced to nothing. But then something amazing happens. If you keep your eye on the water, what happens? The current pulls the water back out, and kiviyachol, the water reforms, the water regroups, lifts itself back up again, becomes a mighty wave, is about to overtake everything, and then what happens? Crashes again, turns into simple, nothing, uninspiring surf. The tide, the current kicks in, pulls it back out. The Ribono Shel Olam says, you know, waves, I really admire you guys. I really admire the waves. Why do I admire the waves? Because most things in this world, when they crash and become nothing, usually don't have the courage to get back up and start again. Yet you waves, you crash time after time after time. And you've been crashing for the last thousands of years. And yet, every single time you crash, you always do the same thing. You pick yourself back up, you reform, you reformulate, you come back. And even though again you're going to crash again, you find the courage to keep regrouping. You find the courage to keep reforming. You find the courage to keep moving forward. Says the Tzar. That's the pshat in the pasuk. Atamosha begeas hayom. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, yes, God, David says, God, you rule the swelling of the sea. The sea is mighty, but you are even mightier. Bisho galov ato tishabchem. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu, remember, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Every single time he created something, he said, Kitov. He said, Kitov. What is God teaching us when he says Kitov? What is he teaching us? Very important lesson, which is? Give compliments. Give compliments. It's exceptionally important. Give compliments, even to things that you created, to your children, to your spouse, to your friends, to people you do know, to people you don't know. If God can give compliments, you're not busier than God, right? Give compliments. Vayar lekim, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Kitov, it was good, you give compliments. David HaMelech says, God compliments the sea. Atot tishabchim, b'so galov atot tishabchim. Not that God quiets the waves. Not that God stills the waves. Not that God brings down the waves. God praises the waves. Why? Because the waves are perhaps the one thing in nature which consistently crash, fall, fail, yet demonstrate the unbreakable resolve to try again. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu praises them each and every day for that incredible resolve. Going back, now we understand, says the Sfas Emes, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why the Sanhedrin did not want Herod to coat the exterior walls with gold. A golden Beis HaMikdash would have been beautiful. But you know, it's even more beautiful than a golden Beis HaMikdash, a Beis HaMikdash that looks like waves. Can you imagine being Ole Regel? Halavai, we'll have this opportunity speedily in our days. But can you imagine that moment when you come up to Yerushalayim, when you're ascending and you see the Beis HaMikdash in the distance? And the truth is, you look at it and you know it's a building, but it looks like a standing ocean. It looks like waves. Said the rabbis to Herod, don't change that. We want the people to see the waves for one simple reason. We want the people to be inspired by the waves. Because the waves are perhaps the most inspirational creation in all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's incredibly magnificent universe. Because the waves learned something that we try and sometimes successfully learn as well. Which is, life is filled with failure. Life is filled with many crash and burns. Life happens so many times. How many times in life have we had that moment where everything is going great? Everything is going beautifully, right? My wave is gathering momentum. And it's beautiful and it's fantastic. And I'm going to conquer everything. And then what happens? I crash. Right? I crash. And what 5 minutes ago was such a beautiful wave is now like some irrelevant surf, right, on the shore of life that no one even takes notice of. What do you do in those moments when you crash on the shore? So you have a choice. You could remain irrelevant surf on the shore of life, or you could find the koach to pull yourself back out to sea, reforge, reformulate, try again, recognizing that there are no guarantees of success. Even in the 2nd, 5th, 37th, or 118th try in life. But all you can do is to try. Said the rabbis to Hordus, don't change the exterior of the Beis HaMikdash. Because you don't understand how incredibly inspirational it is just for people to look upon and ultimately learn from the waves. If we bring this back, this becomes our third and final message. From the water. What do the waters say to us? Mikolos Mayim Rabim. Yes, the sea, the ocean, has incredible voices, makes thunderous sounds. But you know what the greatest part of the ocean really is? Adirim Mishpere Yam. Adirim Mishpere Yam. The greatest part of the ocean are the waves. The waves are not only the strongest. Remember again, the word adir can mean strong. The word adir can mean great. The word adir can mean precious. The most precious, strongest, most magnificent part of the ocean are the waves. Why? See, you want to hear the amazing part? As everyone up until now is kind of categorizing the waves as difficulty and adversity. According to the Zohar, according to the Sasemes, the waves aren't adversity. The waves are the greatest metaphor for human strength. It's the ability to regather yourself in the aftermath of life failure. It's the ability to regain your composure even after hitting the shore and mamish dissolving into nothing. So the sea says to us, look at me. Look at me. Adirim mishpirayam. Look at my waves. And look how my waves gather so much momentum, so much strength, look so great, and then are reduced to nothing. And then in the next moment, what do? They simply try again. Look at my waves, the sea says to us. Learn from my waves, ultimately to do the same. And so, such as we close out for today, the sea teaches us three dramatic lessons. Number one, if you want to forge a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to see the greatness of God, look at His creation, specifically the sea. Look at the greatness, the power of the sea, and you will come to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lesson number two, Rabbi Nachman, life is filled with tidal waves of incredible life adversity. It is a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is your buoy. It is a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is your life preserver. It is a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that keeps you anchored and allows you to stand back up even as you are being pummeled by the waves. But that relationship cannot be cultivated just based on simple mechanistic behavior. That relationship requires something much purer and simpler. A talking with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. a daily conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Establish that relationship. Attach yourself to the divine. And you will be able to weather the waves of existence. And lesson number three is that just like the rabbis did not want Herod to change the exterior of the Beis HaMikdash, because they wanted us to see the waves. The sea says to us in Perek Shira, don't look at the water temperature. Don't look at the beautiful color of the water. Look at the waves. The waves find the courage to get back up, even in the aftermath of dramatic life failure. May we be zocha to find the courage to do the same. Okay, we'll stop over here.